In the wake of violent events such as the 2015 attack at a Charleston church that left 9 African-American parishioners dead, there are moments of introspection and theories floated about how violence can be prevented. Frequently, the conversations center more on what to do in the moment, such as having more police, more guards, and a show of more force.
But in the wake of recent mass shootings, such as the February 14th shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School or the shooting in Las Vegas that left 59 people dead, many have started to question whether other issues could be at play. Namely, some have wondered if the rigid gender roles boys are expected to live up to could be making these issues worse.
Our next guest is here to talk about the challenges boys have, why they're sometimes angry and isolated, and what parents and society can do to support boys and men to live a more emotionally whole life.
Niobe Way is a professor of developmental psychology at New York University and is the author of Deep Secrets, Boys' Friendships and the Crisis of Connection. Niobe, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's a joy to be here.
When we talk about masculinity, what are we talking about exactly?
Yeah, so basically, when I'm referring to masculinity, I'm referring to the element of masculinity that seems to be the most harmful for boys, according to the boys themselves. And that really is the privileging of the sort of self or the individual over relationships and the expectation to be emotionally stoic rather than emotionally vulnerable. The reason why those two things are particularly detrimental for boys is because, of course, to have quality relationships, you need a certain amount of emotional vulnerability. So if both of them are dismissed and devalued for boys as they grow up, it creates a problem of isolation and loneliness and all sorts of problems. So when I, you know, to clarify to your listeners, this is not an attack on all forms of masculinity. This is really a critique of specific aspects of masculinity that, according to the boys themselves, is most detrimental.
And how early in life are boys being conditioned to be masculine in one way or another?
Right, exactly. So what you find in the research, some of the research is my own research with teenage boys. I follow the same boys over many, many years, from about 11 to 18. And that was a body of work by Judy Chu of 4 and 5 year old boys. And you see basically at both developmental periods, I would say middle adolescence in my work, and just as boys enter school, 4 and 5, in Judy's work, which is a real struggle with their coming into, for 4 and 5 year old boys, they're coming into a context in which for the very first time for some boys who haven't been to daycare, et cetera, they're facing these expectations to not say things, to not reveal that they actually like to play with girls, or that so they create things. In Judy's work, she finds them creating teams like the mean team that doesn't like girls, and even though they privately confess to liking girls and liking to play with girls, but the mean team doesn't allow them to do that. In my work with early adolescents and middle adolescents, you obviously don't have mean teams, but you have a sort of version, a teenage version of that, which is boys at 12, 13, 14 are very explicit about their desire for close friendships with other boys. They say amazingly astute things about the importance of these relationships. If they didn't have them, they would go wacko, quote unquote. And then you hear their language shift about 15, 16, and the language becomes much less soft. It becomes more I don't care or an angry, frustrated expressions. And that's exactly the time, exactly when they start to struggle with finding the close friendships that they want or keeping the ones they have, and they start to sound more angry and frustrated, or the sort of checking out, you know, I don't care voice, is exactly the age that you see the suicide rate in the United States jump up to be 5 times the rate of girls, and you start to see the boys who are committing these acts of mass violence and just violence in general occurring at very high rates. So most of the boys who are doing the killing and same with sexual assault on campus, of course, college campuses, they're between 16 and 25. And that really is a period of what I'm calling a crisis of connection, where boys have basically been told that to act and to be fully human, meaning to express a desire for friendships and closeness and intimacy and use their natural emotional skills is girly and gay, and it's discouraged and pathologized, and that boys essentially, as they told me in 13 years old, some boys, quote unquote, go wacko, which is because they, you know, we know as humans we need these relationships, but yet we live in a culture that doesn't value the very relationships we need.
And Niobe, I was going to ask you about any connection to what's going on physically with boys at that age. And actually, we have a caller who is along those lines. So let's go to the phones at 800-642-1234. Marty in Lake Geneva is up. Hi, Marty.
Good afternoon. Maybe an off-the-wall thought, but here it goes. Why not, in these aggressive types, extract X amount of testosterone to get them back down to a less aggressive state?
Interesting question, Marty. So is there a connection? We're talking about an age where young bodies are going through a lot of changes.
Well, this is the interesting thing. So to counter the idea that it's just testosterone, the very age that they're going through puberty and their levels of testosterone are going up, et cetera, is actually the age when they're most expressive and most revealing of this desire for closeness. And then, you know, when they transition is actually when they're starting to look like full-grown men and people are having these expectations that they should now be focusing on the opposite sex rather than having these close friendships. So there's no data that I know of that links this sort of, decline into loneliness and isolation with testosterone. And the anger certainly is, the aggression certainly is, obviously. But the aggression, really, when you listen to boys themselves, and I've been listening to them for almost 30 years, you hear that the aggression comes directly from feelings of exclusion and loneliness. I mean, basically, boys will tell you directly, and they've told me this for almost 30 years, that when they feel lonely, when they feel excluded, when they feel like other people have friends and they don't have friends, and that other people are liked and they're not liked, and nobody's paying attention to them, which is almost true across the board of boys who are violent, they start to feel angry and rageful. And then I do think there's some kind of psychological break that happens, because I don't think people kill other people without having some kind of psychological break. But it's really the sense of isolation provoking that extreme isolation. I mean, we even see it, when we solitary confinement in prisons. You know, men will report to literally, lose their mind in those situations. And essentially, many boys in this culture, unfortunately, feel, in similar circumstances and just radically isolated, and it makes them enraged. And then they have these kind of, for the boys who kill other people or themselves, they have these kind of breaks. So I don't think there's any real evidence to suggest that testosterone's the problem. It's really a culture that's a problem rather than hormones.
We're talking with Niobe Way right now. She's a professor of developmental psychology at New York University, and she's the author of Deep Secrets, Boys, Friendships, and the Crisis of Connection. And Niobe, you say that you've been talking to and listening to boys for many, many years.
Yeah.
Do they share with you whether they wish they could talk to more people, but not knowing how or not knowing who to turn to, it would be safe to talk about being a boy, being a man?
Right. I mean, it really depends on what age you're talking about. So when I work right now with 12-year-old boys in an all-boys school down the street from me in the Lower East Side called the George Jackson Academy, and I work with 12, work means I'm in the classroom with boys trying to work with the English teacher to do an intervention we're doing with boys at the moment. And what you hear from those voices is very clear, a kind of emotional astuteness and open expression that we associate with being a girl, meaning it's incredibly astute, it's watching the human world, they're incredibly good observers of the human world, and then they express the contradictions that they see and all sorts of things, because we create a safe space for boys to talk how they naturally talk, which is like a human being noting these amazing things that humans can do. And then you start to see that boys really go underground. So you start to see the very same boy that said at 13, I love him so much, I can't live without him. It's like you can't explain it. It's just I know him so well, he knows me so well, I can't live without him. To the same boy at 15, when asked about his close friends, says immediately, I'm not gay. And, you know, to the very same question. Mm-hmm. So then you see boys say, the most disturbing quote that I've gotten in some form many, many times is a boy who says at 16, it might be nice to be a girl because then I wouldn't have to be emotionless. Mm. What's amazing to me that I always want to emphasize to your listeners is just the way in which boys tell the story. They directly tell the story. They talk about they reveal their human capacity for deep connection and their amazing ability to read the social and emotional world. And then they tell the story about a culture that tries to stomp that right out of them, that tries to say that if you act like that, you are not a man, you are not a real man. And so we raise boys to go against their nature, our culture does, and then some of them grow up and, you know, and act crazy. Meaning, you know, are violent or whatever it is, or commit suicide. So the whole idea is that, you know, if we listen to boys rather than just project our own, you know, stereotypes onto them, you hear a very, very different story. I mean, you hear a boy that say, I know exactly what's at the root of the crisis of connection. I know exactly what the solution is. You have to help us nurture these, you know, relational relationships, emotional, social capacities. And allow us to, you know, help us maintain positive relationships. And I would even say, just Judith, something I wanted to add is, it's not simply just having emotional language. It's being able to have close relationships, and you need the emotional language to have those relationships. Because what's really missing is, we sometimes teach boys, or we encourage their empathy or something like that, which is obviously a good step. I'm not criticizing it, but it's not enough. It needs to really be helping boys and girls, obviously, too, but boys have more of the pressure to disconnect, is have them helping healthy friendships, mutually supportive friendships, helping them. You know, you have many boys struggling with trying to actually stay close to their mom or dad, but they don't know how, and they don't want to do it in a way that feels lame, or to be called a mama's boy or whatever it is that the way we pathologize mm-hmm. boys who are close to their mothers. I just think it really is about not just the emotional part, but the emotional part in the service of fostering social, you know, social skills and social relationships.
We're talking with Niobe Way right now. She's a professor of developmental psychology at New York University, and she's the author of Deep Secrets, Boys, Friendships, and the Crisis of Connection. And she's with us to talk about how raising kind and caring boys can help them in adulthood.
And you can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. As a parent, have you felt the pressure to have your son act like a man? If you are a man, did the pressure to be tough, did you feel that pressure? How did it make you feel? What would you like to see change in our society? Give us a call right now at 800-642-1234. Again, that number is 800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org.
We'll pick up the conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Chris Molina. Right now, we continue the conversation about how parents and society can support boys so that they can become kind and caring adults. Our guest is Niobe Way. She's a professor of developmental psychology at New York University.
And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. If you're a parent, what questions do you have about raising sweet sons? If you're a man, do you feel as though you were groomed to be angry and distant? What are your thoughts about that? Call in at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And Niobe, it's interesting because the feminist movement really allowed girls and women to live their lives on a much bigger scale and in a much larger and more varied landscape. Yep. But some have argued that boys and men were really left behind, and there hasn't been a similar movement to give them that same latitude.
Yeah, well, so it's an interesting phenomenon because it's connected, but not in the way that oftentimes gets presented. So I would argue that the ferocious sort of monitoring of boys not acting like so-called girls or gay kids comes from actually a kind of backlash to a backlash to feminism and the gay rights movement. So the more we sort of have progressed in our allowing women to be, or, you know, women in power positions and gay people in power positions, the more ferocious this kind of, you know, to be a man, you have to be not girly and not gay, which is essentially equivalent to, in our culture, relational, emotional, social. Because, you know, it's interesting. I was watching Rebel Without a Cause the other day from 1955, and that is just a much softer version of masculinity in 1955 than we have now. And we don't think it is, but if you rewatch that movie, you will see that James Dean and Natalie Wood, essentially that movie is about teenagers fighting for relationships, fighting for friendships and closeness with their dads. And I just think it's interesting how we think that it's gotten better with norms of masculinity, and I would argue in the past century it's gotten worse, that men are more rigidly monitored to not look like a girl or a gay kid, stereotypically, obviously, because it's that whole thing that kids will even tell me this. You know, my uncle's gay, but don't think I'm gay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that whole sense of I have to distinguish myself, and I'm going to do it in the most hyper-masculine, misogynist, you know, homophobic way, by you know, you didn't see that in the James Dean character. You know, quite frankly, he's Mr. Softy, mm-hmm. and you know, the dad is as well, and the other dad of Natalie Wood. I mean, it's just interesting that we think we've progressed, and in some ways we've gone backwards. And I would say it's a backlash against women and gay people in more positions of power.
Niobe, earlier this week we had a researcher on the show who argued that empathy could be a key to reducing acts of violence, and she pointed to the story of Antoinette Tuff, an elementary school bookkeeper in Georgia who helped prevent a school shooting by talking to the potential shooter. Throughout their conversation, he confided in her that he was suicidal. She
yep.
managed to get through to him by identifying with him, sharing
yep.
her own struggles with that,
yep.
and listening to how he was feeling. Is that... If we can replicate that in everyday life, not just in crisis situations, is that a step in the right direction?
I absolutely, of course. I mean, in some sense, of course it is. The only thing I worry about is what's happening to the Parkland kids, which is that they're being accused, apparently, of not being empathic enough for the kid who killed all these people. And so I think the problem with the limitation with the empathy when it stops there is then it becomes another way to blame individuals. You weren't empathic enough. And if I want to keep the conversation on a cultural level, we have to take responsibility as a culture that we don't value the very thing we need, the very qualities we have as humans, for boys and men. So we ask boys and men to act like part human or not human at all in terms of not valuing their relationships, not needing their relationships, not, you know, having these emotional and social skills. So it's a cultural problem. It's not an individual problem. And empathy oftentimes, unfortunately, leads to a sort of focus on the individual. We don't value empathy, so that's a cultural problem. So that's why, you know, any intervention that fosters empathy is a great thing. But we have to see it as a cultural problem. And just like we had to bring in gay marriage and change the culture to legalize it, we have to begin to, as a culture, value our close relationships, define maturity about having to, you know, have quality relationships, not just being self-sufficient.
Niobe, I want to get to one of our callers before we run out of time.
Yep.
Paul in Fort Atkinson is up. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I just had a question or two. I was curious about her experience. I know she probably wrote a book or whatever, but does she have any sons? Does she have any nephews? Has she spent any time as a teacher teaching young boys? Where does all this need for empathy among boys in her mind come from? And then the other part of my question is I think this is part of the problem with what's wrong with America is trying to soften everybody up too much, trying to make playgrounds too safe. Kid falls down and scrapes his knee. You coddle him too much. Yeah, there's a need for empathy. My son has great empathy for animals. Hmm. He wants to be a zookeeper. He wants to spend his future dealing with stuff like this. And then the other part of it too is this some kind of feminist agenda to demasculate people for some deconstructive purpose.
Okay, Paul, thanks for both of those points. We're running short on time, so Niobe, I want to give you a chance to briefly respond to Paul.
Yeah, I mean, the simple answer to his questions is that everything I say is coming directly from what boys directly tell me. And they've been telling me that over approximately 30 years, and it's thousands of boys by now. So this is none of this is my construction or my interpretation. This is boys directly saying, I need this, I want this, no one's paying attention, why is nobody paying attention, I want a close friend, I want to be able to do this, and nobody's paying attention. And when I read journals even of kids who have committed suicide, it's the same theme in their journals, that they're starving for connection, deep connection with each other, with their parents, et cetera, and they're being pathologized for that desire. And that is really the root of the problem, and it's not coming from any ideology or agenda. It's coming from the boys themselves.
And briefly, Niobe, we actually did a show yesterday about bringing risk back into playgrounds. And do you see that as being mutually exclusive? Can we develop resilience and grit in kids, but also give them the opportunity to express themselves in these other ways?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, I just think we have to be very careful to not start conflating things that really don't have to do with one another. I mean, helping boys have positive relationships and friendships and have the closeness that they're looking for is very different from the kinds of toys they play out in the playground. And I just think, you know, if we start to conflate it, it becomes sort of silly, because, of course, I think all kids should be able to swing on a tire across the, you know, in a tree, and even though that's lots of risk-filled, they should be able to do it, girls and boys, anybody. And that we do certainly try to protect our children sometimes too much from any kind of risk, which is not helpful for them.
And we'll have to leave it there. Niobe Way, thank you so much for joining us. Niobe Way is a professor of developmental psychology at New York University. She joined us to talk about how we can help boys become kind and caring men.